Now, back to brainstorming with Billy.
You know, I think your brain produces a chemical that blocks out my voice.
What?
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Welcome back. This is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain here on KKZZ, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura and Santa Barbara Counties. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is changing your perception. Each of my guests is changing our perception about his or her subject. My next guest is a professor at Cal Lutheran University. She's a medical sociologist whose research has focused on sexual health. We'll investigate Governor Rick Perry's controversial decision to vaccinate Texas schoolgirls with Gardasil, and we'll explain what the decision means for those girls and their parents. And if you want to join in the conversation, or if you want to ask a question, you can call us at 639-0008. And that's the same number that you'll use to call in to win a medium-sized two-topping pizza from Cordello's Pizza in Ventura, 1700 East Thompson Boulevard. Be the second caller at 639-0008, and the coupon for a medium two-topping pizza can be yours. Call us now, 639-0008. Dr. Adina Nack is an associate professor of sociology and is the founding director of CLU's Center for Equality and Justice. She's also served as the director of CLU's Gender and Women's Studies Program and the chair of the sociology department. She's a medical sociologist whose research has focused on sexual health, social psychology, social inequality, gender, and sexuality. Adina authored a book titled Damaged Goods on women living with genital herpes and HPV infections. It was published by Temple University Press back in 2008. A proponent of community-based action research, Adina was the co-principal investigator of Ventura County's two recent studies of Latinos as receiving HIV/AIDS services funded by the California State Office of AIDS. Adina received her PhD from the University of Colorado at Boulder and joined CLU in 2003 after having been on the faculty at the University of Maine. Welcome to the show, Adina. How are you today?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me.
Well, thank you for being our guest, and thank you for being a subject matter expert, too. You're one of the county's leading experts on human papillomavirus, also known as HPV for short. And I invited you on the show to discuss Rick Perry's controversial decision to mandate a vaccine for sixth grade girls, which is designed to help prevent cervical cancer. So let's start with the basics. What is HPV, and how does it manifest itself?
Sure. So human papillomavirus is an umbrella term for dozens of different strains of a virus that often causes warts that can also cause precancerous lesions. And certain strains of HPV are most often transmitted through sexual contact or oral to genital contact is another route of transmission. And it's become a little bit more of a topic in recent years because of the Gardasil vaccine. Gardasil vaccine, it was branded and marketed initially as a cervical cancer vaccine. And it was through that marketing that people started to learn that, in this case, a particular type of cancer seemed to be linked to a virus that was sexually transmitted. And so I think we're still, unfortunately, as a nation, lacking a true public health campaign to make us all aware of HPV, how it's transmitted, how to protect ourselves from it in ways other than vaccination. And so most of the focus has been on this question of the vaccine.
Well, it's always the case, isn't it, Adina, with Americans, we'd rather pop a pill or take a vaccine than to have to think about something regimen that we have to do day in and day out. Do you find that that's typically true?
Well, right. And, you know, we're still a society. We're talking about sex is very taboo. We don't really have thorough, comprehensive sexual health education in our K-12 schools. So we have a lot of young people who are in a culture that tells them it's okay to be sexual, but who really lack basic medical and health information about how to keep themselves safe.
All right, that's fair enough. My guest is Dr. Adina Nack, professor at CLU. So how does HPV manifest itself? If it's various strains, how does it manifest itself in a girl or a woman that has HPV?
Right. The typical manifestation are, I think because of Rick Perry, we'll focus on the Gardasil vaccine, which protects against four particular strains of HPV, two that are highly linked to cervical cancer and two that are highly linked to genital warts.
Okay.
And so that gives your listeners a sense of the two major ways that it manifests. But I want to make sure that listeners understand that HPV does not discriminate on the basis of sex. It is an equal opportunity virus. So it is equally prevalent in males, boys and men, and it affects them in some similar ways. Now, of course, boys and men do not have a cervix, but they are finding that HPV is causing cancers that could be anal cancers, penile cancers, and probably the most alarming growth in terms of HPV-related cancer knowledge is that it's causing a lot of fatal oral and throat cancers. And those are often happening in men.
Wow. And I want to come back and talk about men in just a minute, because we are the forgotten gender in this discussion. But before we do, let's talk, as you said, on the subject of Gardasil. Now, Gardasil is a vaccine that is marketed by Merck and Company. First of all, is it effective, and are there any risks with Gardasil?
Well, every vaccine has risks. And every vaccine that gets approved by the FDA and then kind of regulated by the Centers for Disease Control is considered to be effective enough, if that makes sense.
All right.
You know, there's no such thing as a 100% effective vaccine, and there's no such thing as a 100% risk-free vaccine. That said, the risks of HPV vaccination are definitely making the news a lot, and some of it's theory and some of it's fact. So I encourage your listeners to check out the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention website, and they have a great webpage that specifically focusing on health concerns following HPV vaccination, so they can actually see the number of reported adverse and serious adverse event reports is the way that they view it.
And
some of those events are, in fact, deaths. But the CDC is very careful to say that these are deaths that follow receiving the Gardasil vaccine, but they cannot necessarily be causally linked. So there is still no proven death that person A received the Gardasil vaccine, and that, in fact, was the direct cause of death.
All right.
There are reports of deaths following vaccination.
Sure. I mean, Gardasil, as you say, like any vaccination, has risks. There's Guillain-Barre syndrome, or GBS for short. There's the risk of blood clots. And as you said, there are deaths. There have been 68 deaths that have been associated with Gardasil. But who knows what percentage that is of the number of people that have been vaccinated with Gardasil. That's probably statistically a very small number, unless, of course, you're one of those 68 people.
But you're right. I mean, as of June of 2011, the CDC says that approximately 35 million doses of Gardasil were distributed in the U.S.
So,
and they had 18,727 reported adverse events, and of those, only a very small percent were serious. So you're right. It's, you know, statistically speaking, it's a small number, but if it happens to somebody you care about, it doesn't feel like a small number.
Yeah. So let's go back to Governor Perry's proposal, which would be a mandatory vaccination for sixth grade girls. Now, there is an opt-out provision. We need to make that very, very clear for families who don't want to vaccinate their girls. But sixth grade vaccination, I mean, on the one hand, I say, you know, we vaccinate for measles and mumps. Why shouldn't we vaccinate for HPV? On the other hand, these are sixth grade girls. So talk to me about both sides of the discussion about vaccinating sixth graders against
sure.
HPV.
Well, it's important to understand that that age was not picked randomly. So we do understand that HPV, the strains that would be protected against by Gardasil, are transmitted by sexual contact, which doesn't necessarily have to include, you know, full-on sexual intercourse. And so there is enough research trending that our middle school-age girls and boys are engaging in the types of sexual behaviors which could transmit this virus. In other words, sexual activity in the U.S. is starting younger. So the reason for that early age of recommendation is the idea that the vaccine only works if you get it into a person's body before they're ever exposed to that particular virus. And so that was the thought process behind the original approval of Gardasil for girls as young as 9. That was kind of the FDA approval.
And as I think, young, you know, as
Governor,
9?
Right. So that's what's on the books in terms of what it was tested and approved for. I don't know exactly why he decided that it would be safer to recommend it to a slightly higher age. But, you know, it actually was tested on girls as young as 9.
Wow. Well, I mean, in that answer, there's so many different things. It has my head spinning. Of course, the earlier age of sexual activity among our young people today, that's an interesting and in some cases alarming discovery that they would be engaged in any activity. Now, it should also be noted that not kissing, but certainly beyond that, oral sex would be included as one of those in danger or at-risk sexual activities, isn't it, Adina?
Right. And I think that's really important for parents to remember that it could be transmitted by a mouth-to-mouth behavior, which, you know, they might not find so alarming. Some parents would still find it alarming, I understand. But the other thing is sadly, of course, we cannot prevent non-consensual or sexual assault against our 9, 10, 11, 12-year-olds. So if you're a parent and you believe in this vaccine, I could understand why you would be okay with a younger age. The other important point is that when a child receives any vaccination, it's up to the parent and the pediatrician about how much information they want to give that child. So there is concern that parents feel like this is some sort of a green light for becoming sexually active at the age of 10, you know? And there's no reason to think that that should be communicated to any child receiving the vaccination. And in fact, it would be factually wrong, because you're protecting against four strains of one sexually transmitted disease. There are so many other sexually transmitted diseases that are not involved in this vaccination. So there's no reason to think that it's a green light for unprotected sex for any age group.
All right, fair enough. My guest is Dr. Adina Nack. She is a professor at CLU. We're talking about Gardasil and Governor Rick Perry's recent decision to mandate or vaccinations for sixth-grade girls in Texas. So now we know a little bit about what Gardasil does, what Gardasil doesn't do, and that there's an opt-out mechanism for families in Texas who didn't want to have their girls vaccinated to go through this. Do you care to talk about, Adina, the allegations of crony capitalism that are associated with Governor Perry's decision to vaccinate with Gardasil?
Well, I mean, he's obviously very vocally defended himself against those charges, but it seems to be pretty solid in all of the fact-based reporting that he did receive campaign contributions from Merck. So I guess I'm not a political scientist, so I wouldn't take a stand on this particular topic, but I would say, you know, the facts are what they are, and he continues to defend that his position on Gardasil was coming from a public health perspective, of course. But, you know, that's really for voters to decide if they object to that type of campaign contribution following a mandate.
Wow. My guest is Dr. Adina Nack, and you would think that this is a political year with the political correctness of that answer. That was very well done, Adina. Very well done. All right. So let's move on. Let's get away from that. And as somebody who's involved in public health issues, as you are, in sociology and so forth, is mandating vaccinations for HPV the way to address this problem? I mean, like I said earlier, we have vaccines for mumps, measles, chickenpox. Why not HPV?
Well, I'm glad you asked that, because I think what most people in the U.S. don't know is that there is already a sexually transmitted disease vaccine that is likely included in their state's children's vaccination policies, and that is the hepatitis B vaccine. So most parents have their children vaccinated sometime between kindergarten and high school for hepatitis B, and that is a disease that is spread pretty much the same way that the HIV virus is spread. So that's spread by blood contact and by sexual contact. And yet, since the U.S. public is undereducated about hepatitis B, there never was an uproar when that vaccine started getting given out to young children.
All right.
So now, I think we have to be consistent. If we're going to get outraged about one sexually transmitted disease vaccine, we should make sure we understand what we're focused on.
Well, I think that's very sound. Now, speaking of outrage, the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons Incorporated was concerned about the Gardasil mandate, and they actually issued a statement against it. On the other side of that ledger, the FDA and the CDC, the Center for Disease Control, approved the drug. So again, we've got differing points of view from very well-respected, authoritative organizations. How does a parent weigh out this decision? If they don't live in Texas, as we do here in California, how would you weigh out that decision for your own 12-year-old?
Well, I think it is really important to read up. You know, don't just trust media sources. The Centers for Disease Control has very common sense language fact sheets out on all of the vaccines that they have approved. So I think you have to read the information for yourself. I think you have to really talk with your child's pediatrician, because each child has a different health profile, and there could be certain autoimmune diseases or other conditions that your child has, which might give your pediatrician pause, not just for the Gardasil vaccine, but for another vaccine. So I think it has to be an individual decision. And I would just encourage parents that if they have any hesitation about vaccination, then it is their duty to read up on all of the other ways that they can protect their child from this particular set of viruses. And there are lots of behavioral choices. I mean, of course, that doesn't account for non-consensual sex, but they can really do a much better job helping their child to understand what they should do and shouldn't do in terms of putting themselves at risk for this disease. And that can go a long way. But, you know, for those who don't want to have that conversation with their child, or who feel comfortable with the risk of the vaccination, then I think the next step is to have that conversation with their pediatrician.
All right. My guest is Professor Adina Nack. She's a professor over at CLU. We're talking about Gardasil. Now, Adina, you mentioned this earlier, and I want to return to it, because lost in the discussion about Gardasil is the effect on boys and HPV. So give us an idea of the benefits that Gardasil has for boys, and why should boys be concerned about HPV?
Sure. Initially, it was not tested and approved for use on males. And there's different theories, but we won't get into that on the show. Let's just say it didn't happen. So the approval for male use in the United States lagged about 3 years behind female use and was rolled out with much less fanfare and advertising campaign dollars. So a lot of people don't even know that it's available for boys and men. And initially it was presented as a way to protect a boy or a man from genital warts, which were presented also as kind of a nuisance disease, not as something serious. But we have more and more evidence, and I believe we will continue to see more and more prevention approved for male Gardasil to prevent against penile cancers, anal cancer, and a certain subset of oral, throat, head, and neck cancers. And that last one is probably the scariest, because if you think about it, we don't have such a thing as an oral pap smear. So for most people who have these head, neck, and oral cancers, they don't notice that there's something wrong until the tumor is big enough to affect their ability to swallow or in other ways cause them pain and discomfort. And that's a pretty late stage in terms of cancer growth. So we have a lot of reason to think that we'll soon be seeing more approved uses for boys and men in addition to women, because women also get some of these cancers.
All right. My guest is Professor Adina Nack. So, Adina, with all the political rhetoric that's surrounding the whole Rick Perry issue with Gardasil, what's happening to the image of Gardasil and HPV? I mean, is HPV being stigmatized? Is Gardasil and by extension, Merck being vilified? What would be a more productive way to stage this national debate?
Well, I think, again, I go back to education. There are very few negative side effects of education. And what we really need to have is both parents. I would love to see parents of 10-year-olds having free access to comprehensive sexual health education so that they would be in a better position to have these conversations with their children and with their pediatricians. And that takes money. That does take money. And right now we're seeing most of the money is kind of wrapped up in these discussions of pharmaceuticals versus education. So I think that is a big imbalance.
Well, it comes as no surprise that a professor at CLU would be a proponent of education. And we're going to have to leave it there, Adina. If people are interested by what you have to say, they want to learn more about you, learn more about your book, Damaged Goods, and so forth, where would you direct them to go on the Internet?
Well, they can Google Damaged Goods on Amazon.com, or they can go to my own professional website, which is just www.adinanack.com.
Adinanack.com. That's ADINANACK.com. Adina, thank you so much for being my guest here on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We'll talk to you down the road.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Thank you.